No, I don't have your talking points, so I'm glad we're finding that out now. Hey, welcome back to the show. It's Vox Pop, our live afternoon call-in talk show. Woefully unprepared, as usual, it's Ray Graff. Can telling stories make you a better writer? We'll explore that question and others today with a panel of seasoned writers in the studio with us today, a panel of two. Can two people be a panel? That's our first question. Barbara Chepitis is the author of 11 published novels and two nonfiction books. Her most recent nonfiction book is Saving Eagle Mitch, the true story of rescuing a war-wounded eagle from Afghanistan. Her most recent novel is The Amber, about a young woman who tracks her family history through ancient Lithuania alongside a man who sold his soul to the devil and is trying to get it back. She's the founder of the Snickering Witches Storytelling Group and teaches workshops in writing. Also here, Mary Murphy, a writer and teller of stories. She's performed all over, including at the National Storytelling Festival, the Riverway Storytelling Festival, the Clearwater Festival, and the Hawaii Storytelling Festival. Stories in Hawaii, amazing. Her stories have appeared in print magazines and anthologies. She's a story coach at Maple Hill Middle School in Skodak. Hey, you have a writer's block? You have talking points? Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Barbara Chepitis and Mary Murphy, welcome to the show.
Good to be here.
Nice to have you here. If you're listening at home, you can't get to a phone, you can also email voxpop@wamc.org, or you could go to Facebook, facebook.com/WAMC Radio, or tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. So tell me about these talking points that I didn't see.
Well, we were interested in looking at how telling stories helps you be a better writer and how writing stories may help you be a better teller as well.
So you've, of course, Barbara, have written a lot. And Mary, you are primarily a storyteller?
Storyteller, yes, but sometimes I write my own stories.
You do? And then, yes. Then you tell them?
And then I tell them,
I like that. So can you tell us a brief story?
Sure, I can tell a story.
I'd love to hear that.
I can tell a folk tale.
Okay.
A British folk tale called The Dog That Talked. A man was entering a village inn one day when a large sheepdog lying beside the door looked up and said, "Good morning, sir." Well, the man was shocked and he started in again. But as he got to the front of the door, the dog once again said, "Good morning, sir." And the man said, "Well, good morning." And he went into the inn, went right up to the landlord, and she said, "That's an amazing dog you've got lying just outside." And the landlord looked out and he said, "Oh, no, that's just my old sheepdog. There's nothing special about him, sir." "Nothing special? He said good morning, sir, to me twice." Oh, no, sir, impossible. You must have it wrong." "But he did." "Wait a minute," said the landlord. "I'll tell you what. Was there another dog out there as well?" And the man thought for a minute. He said, there was a little white terrier, but he was lying quite a ways off." And the landlord said, "Ah, that'd be it, sir. He's a ventriloquist."
Yeah. Mary Murphy and Barbara Chepitis are here. It's the Writers Forum. We haven't done one of these in some time. So, tell me about how something that has been either passed down through history orally or is a made up story that is told then makes that switch to the written word. It's got to be a tricky transition.
Well, you know what? It happens all the time that we're not aware of. And one of the things I get a lot of value out of from storytelling is that as a writer, I became aware of the patterns that occur in stories, in these old folk tales particularly, which have specific patterns that have been like gleaned through many teeth. That's the way storytellers put it. Yeah. And so you'll see every Hollywood movie you see is probably following one of those patterns. Pretty Woman was based on Cinderella, right?
Right.
We repeatedly tell the war story, the story of courage and heroic endeavor and self-sacrifice. And that's from many old stories as well. There are some stories we don't tell quite as much, which is a shame. But which also have specific patterns. The story of making peace doesn't get told that often. But there are specific...
Not these days, eh?
I know. I know. But we have, even within New York State, we have the story of the peacemaker, the Iroquois peacemaker, which is the paradigmatic story of how that gets done. And as a writer, you look at those patterns, you become aware of them, and you ask yourself, especially if you're writing something like I am, like a big bulky novel, and you want to keep track of your plot points and what's happening where, you can refer back to these and say, oh, right, this is the pattern, this is how it goes. Then you can decide whether you want to break it or keep it.
A good point. Now, yeah. You know, when you're writing something that large and bulky or however you described it, falling back on archetypes like this, that can get to be a crutch, though, right?
No. I don't. I had a teacher who told me there's only one story. We just keep retelling it in different ways.
Yeah.
So I'm not troubled by that at all. And I don't think it's a crutch because your characters will influence which way it goes. As long as you're solid with your characters, your people, you're not going to fall into that trap.
Cadences, the way people speak. It must, Mary, when you're telling a story, that must weigh on your mind. And it occurs to me that when you're writing a novel, that also comes into play and can change, presumably will change from novel to novel.
Well, with a lot of these stories, they're told first. It's the oral telling, and then it's the writing, maybe years later, maybe decades later. It's just different. And as it's told, it's polished or burnished, and some words are taken out and some plot things are taken out, and people change it and make it their own. And then when a teller comes along who wants to write down their own version of the tale, I think that they are ready to get all those, as you say, cadences in their ears, and it just flows out onto the paper as a told story. And when I'm teaching kids to tell, I say, look for a story that is from the oral tradition, from another storyteller, because that's going to be the story that's polished and burnished and ready to tell.
But when you tell that story, you're changing that just by the way you tell it.
Right. It becomes yours. That's what a folk's lore does. It becomes your story. It's of the people every time you tell it. And then you tell it to somebody else, like Barb, and it becomes her story, or yours, mm-hmm. and it becomes yours.
Yes. Our number to call here is 800-348-2551. We talk writing every so often, and it has been a while. Barbara Chapaitis was here maybe a year ago?
No, it was in the winter. It was sometime
was it
like when it was cold.
Much more recently than that?
Yes.
Oh, boy, I know, I'm really getting bad. Number to call is 800-348-2551. Now, you're working on a secret project. We can't bring this up at all.
We can't bring this up. I know.
Are you working on anything you can talk about?
It's going to be fun when we can talk
all
about
right.
it.
All right. Fair enough. Mary, what are you doing lately?
Well, I'm telling stories. I've just recently worked in the Maple Hill Middle School as a storyteller in residence. And so I told stories to the kids, and they're seventh graders. And then I got them to tell stories. I said, go into the library, and we brought books, the 398 folklore section. If you have a story that you want to write or make up yourself, that's fine. But love your story. Go find a story that you really like, and you'll be able to memorize it. And within 2 weeks, the students know their story. They learn the storytelling techniques, and then they tell their stories in front of an audience.
What are the best, the most important techniques when you're telling a story?
Well, the most important techniques, there's simple things like that. You have to be heard.
Right.
And you have
project.
To have good diction. You have to project, right? You have to make eye contact. You have to, unlike being in the theater where you're making eye contact with your fellow actor, when you're telling a story, you need the audience. You need mm-hmm. them to
Absolutely.
Give you whatever feedback they can give you. And if you see somebody falling asleep, that tells you something, too. If you see them laughing hilariously, then you know that there's something there.
Okay, so you've told a story many places and many times. What happens when you bomb and there is no response? Then what do you do?
That doesn't happen to us.
Well, it can happen to the best of them.
You know, I have to tell you, it only happened to me once, and it was at a the Kleiner Art Festival in Woodstock, and the audience was very still, and we were a little, you know, befuddled by this and a little flustered by it. And afterwards, the woman who was directing the show and the program and the whole series came up to us and said, wow, I've never seen them so excited. Okay, some audiences do not give much of a response.
So in that instance, then you have to rely on your own personal discipline and say, look, I'm doing this the right way and I have to go forward. But when there's no feedback, it can be difficult, right?
Right. Yeah. But you move on. Like with kids, I once told the story I just told at the beginning of the program, the ventriloquist story to third graders. I have no idea why I decided to tell that story to third graders. But at the very end, I said, he's a ventriloquist. And they all looked up at me, and the teacher just looked at me and shook her head and she said, They don't
they
get
don't
it.
Know what it is.
Well,
don't get it.
You know, I think that's a problem.
I think it is.
Knowing your audience. And we know our audience. The number to call here is 800-348-2551. Mary Murphy and Barbara Chepitis are here. It's the Writers Forum on Vox Pop. We'll get to your calls coming up in a moment.
Support for WMC comes from Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting Edward Bike, Picturing the American Revolution, juxtaposing a 20th century view of the Revolutionary War with 18th century portraits, arkellmuseum.org. Claire Pearson, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, for 14 years, offering plant spirit medicine and energy clearing for health, body, mind, and spirit, clarepearson.net. Waterwheel Village, Galway, New York, a country store since 1923, offering aged cheddar cheeses, nostalgic candies, New York products and gifts, waterwheelvillage.com. Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever, agstewardship.org. And the Lathrop Communities, serving older adults in the Quaker tradition for 25 years, independent living in Northampton and East Hampton, Massachusetts, in the heart of the Pioneer Valley, lathrop.kendall.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, 800-348-2551. Still haven't found those talking points, but you know we're doing just fine. It's Mary Murphy, a writer and teller of stories, and Barbara Chepitis, who tells stories and writes stories and novels and nonfiction. And your calls are welcome here at 800-348-2551. One of the things you guys wanted to touch on was the telling and or writing of personal stories. And that's tricky. That's not a 101. That's a 301 at least.
You think so?
I think so. Here, get a little closer to the mic.
How come?
Well, I think to let go and to let go of your own fears of putting it out there, I think that takes someone on the next level.
But I grew up in a family where people were telling stories all the time. You couldn't get one of us to shut up.
Yeah, but does that mean they're true? I mean, are you talking about...
You know, the Irish say, never let the truth stand in the way of a good story.
Oh, but, I see where you're going.
But they were fun family stories, and they told us about who we are. You see your ancestry as this whole big book, right? The book of life. And what's your chapter, yeah, right? What was the chapter that came before you, and what's your chapter now? And when we give that to our children, it helps them place themselves in the world and hark back to the strength of those who came before them. You know, I came from an immigrant family. I asked my mother, why did your father come from Italy to here? And she said, well, he was in love with a girl whose family moved to Boston. So he came here. I said, oh, did he marry her? She said, no, when he got here, he couldn't find Boston. So he married someone else.
Oh, that's great. Right? That's a good story.
That explains a great deal of my love life.
Turned left at Boston. Right? Yeah, could be your next book. All right, let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551. Anna in Saratoga, you're first.
Oh, hello, everyone. Hello. I am wondering how to know when you're ready to tell your story. I'm stuck in research mode, I think, and taking college classes on technical writing, but thinking I'd like to learn some creative writing patterns. Do I want to tell the story as a songwriter, as a screenwriter? How can I have the most impact? And if I really want to write to change the world, those are my big talking points.
What about mime?
No? Oh, Ray. Okay. Oh, Ray. Right. We don't know what to
I'll
do with him sometimes.
Right.
You know, my suggestion would be to, I don't know how big your story is, get out of research mode and talk to someone. People forget that writing occurs not just in your garret all alone. It's a conversational habit. So tell someone your story. Go to one of the Front Parlor?
Yeah,
that storytelling series for telling stories, and tell it there. Tell it to a bunch of people. That will help you. Journalists use this trick when they're trying to find their lead in. If you go up to someone and say, my story is about, and then start talking, that will hone it for you. That will make it sharper and finer and keep you on point.
And even telling it in front of your family or to your spouse or someone like that, as long as you get it out there, and the more times you get it out, you're doing that polishing and changing orally. And some people call it rehearsing for writing. The mm-hmm. oral is the rehearsing mm. for the written word. And that'll maybe get you out of that just looking stuff up and researching.
Anna, thanks for the call. Is there ever a point in the storytelling evolution where the story then has become static? It has now, you have reached perfection, and every time you tell it, it is the same.
No, you know why? It's the audience. The mm-hmm. audience doesn't let you do that because they're looking at you and they're giving you everything you need or telling you that they're not getting stuff from you. And so each telling is different. And I right. read something by Richard Chase, who was a famous folklorist, and he said, never tell a folklore piece or a folk story the same way twice. Mm. It's always going to change. And it's not you doing it. It's the audience giving you different things.
Although I'm gonna make an exception to that, a couple of exceptions. And one is, I think there's certain points of timing that become sort of, you know, this is going to work. You're like a stand-up comic.
Yeah.
And you know this timing, pausing here and going forward there works. And I think in certain lines that you know will work. And I also think that, for instance, that story you told when we were at Frank and Dee's Wynn's house
right.
the last time about the subway.
Yes.
That's
yes.
pretty specific.
Yes.
And that was, it was very musical because it contained all these directions in it, and the way she told them was like a song.
Right, and
like
I
singing a song.
I was thinking of that as a personal story.
Yes.
is told differently than a folk tale. It because you've honed that story and you've done your rehearsing and you've written it down, and it's the way you want it to be.
Right,
yeah. With every single word the same way. And so when I have a story like that, then I do, and I've written a right. few.
So that's chamber music as opposed to, say, jazz.
Right.
Yeah, and some are jazz, yes. and some are... There are some stories that I tell when I'm doing telling where I have audience members take part in it. And they change depending on, you know, what weird things the audience does.
But so. When you write a novel, like The Amber, mm-hmm. you're not getting that feedback from the audience where, okay, well, I got to change the timing a little bit on this. How do you do right. that and be sure that now your internal timing says, okay, this is good?
I advise my students always, and in workshops we practice this, read out loud.
Yeah.
Read your stuff out loud. Read it to someone else. Read it to yourself. Because when you're reading something on the page, you also have the experience of something heard as well as something seen.
Right.
There's a sound effect. If I say the word soft, that's different than saying fuzzy. Right. And
yeah.
they will have similar qualities, but you get a different feel just from the sound.
So you read aloud, or now
Absolutely,
are you so good that you just know how it'll work
I'm
out?
I'm always talking to myself, Ray.
Okay. Good thing you talk
Me
a lot.
Me and my imaginary friends. Okay.
Well,
we got a party going on.
Let's go to Kevin in Brooklyn. Welcome to the party, Kevin. Hey, you're on, man. You there? Did I hit the wrong button? Kevin, are you there? Oh, boy. Try it one last time.
Hey, can you hear me?
We can hear you. You're on.
Hey, sorry about that. Hey, so this is a question for Mary Murphy. You mentioned that you had done some storytelling in Hawaii. I'm interested to hear what exactly that was and what your connection is to Hawaii, if any.
Well, my connection to Hawaii is that my husband was born there.
Cool.
And we've been back to visit many times. He's got lots of family there, fortunately. And Hawaii has a lot of folklore. It's the home of great Hawaiian, Madame Pele and the volcano and all of the different gods. And so when you start digging into that sort of thing, it's a wealth of opportunity to learn stories and then a wealth of opportunity to tell stories, too.
Awesome. That sounds very cool.
Yeah, not a bad gig if you can get it,
no.
right?
Are you a writer, Kevin?
Say that again?
Are you a writer, Kevin?
Yes, I am, but not really a creative one. I'm a corporate writer, like a copywriter, so I'm telling different kinds of stories.
Hey, that's tough, too, man. I was a copywriter for a long time, hundreds of years ago, and That's very tough. And that's another thing where you have to read out loud.
Yes.
It might be your best idea ever on paper, and then you read it out loud and you say, well, that's awful. Kevin, are you actually in Brooklyn now, or are you around here?
I'm in Manhattan right now, actually, working.
But, all right, man.
I am originally from Brooklyn.
Well, geez, get back to work, man.
Thanks a lot. I'll keep
listening. You.
Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Mary Murphy, Barbara Chepitis are here. It's the Writers Forum, and let's go to somebody or other. Oh, it's Jeannie in Kingston. Jeannie, are you there?
I'm here.
You're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm listening to your show, and I'm getting this revelation. I believe I've been a lifelong storyteller. Since I was a little girl, I've been telling stories. Some I make up in my head in the moment, and some I write down a personal stories, and I tell people. Sometimes they're about historical figures and what I believe that person might be thinking and feeling, and I tell the story, and I write this stuff, and people like it, but I find that when I tell them the story, they laugh and they clap and they cry, and I think, oh my, I bet I'm a storyteller.
You gotta monetize this.
The question is, how do I become a storyteller? How do I hone that?
Is there a lot of money in this, Mary?
No.
No?
There's not a lot of money. I say right up front.
Although, you know, the Seneca tale of where stories come from is very clear, and it says you must always pay the storyteller.
Oh, good.
I'm gonna remember that.
You're in Kingston?
Yes.
So I'm guessing they have some storytelling venues there. And I'm guessing you could find them online. Yes?
Okay.
Do you go online? Look up the internet. Look up storytelling groups. Look for open mics where people do poetry readings. You can often get up and tell a brief story instead of reading a poem.
Like we have the Capital District, the storytellers of the Capital District, and people gather and they could listen for a year. And then one day they come and they tell a story and they feel ready.
Mm-hmm.
And that certainly, you sound like you're ready to start telling these stories. Do you ever listen to The Moth?
I love The Moth.
Yes.
Well, call in with one of your stories.
It's a great idea.
See if they'll grab you. There's also quite a lot of storytelling, actually, if you go closer to the city.
Okay.
So I would do a online search for storytelling groups in your area.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure there's an interfaith story circle in Kingston, and probably something that's not connected to faith at all, but just for storytellers.
Mm-hmm. Jeannie, thanks a lot for the call, and good luck. 800-348-2551. Barbara Chepitis and Mary Murphy here. What makes a bad storyteller?
Well, if you're not following, if you're not using your tools of the storyteller, which is mind, body, and voice, if any of those things are out of sync, then you're not going to be a good storyteller because you're not effectively communicating. It's all about communicating the story, taking it inside internally, and then using all of your tools to get it out there to the audience.
I have to say, absolutely, that is correct. And I think the worst thing I've seen both storytellers and novice writers do is when they're telling or writing their story for self-expression and don't understand that they haven't bridged the gap between themselves and their readers or listeners. I have seen some new tellers where it's clearly all about what they feel and it's not about connecting to make the audience feel
something. There's no context there, so the audience doesn't understand, or... The speaker's not communicating the feeling well.
The people on the radio can't. I'm Italian. They can't see my gestures, can they?
No. Well, actually, they can if they're watching. Just keep them clean, all right?
Right. they're encapsulated in themselves and their own emotion, rather than connecting with the audience and asking what do they need to learn.
Yeah.
You know, it's really not when you write and when you tell stories, it's not so much about what you feel. You're not trying to feel what you feel. You're trying to manipulate someone else's feelings.
So this is an awful lot like songwriting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. There's always that partner. There's always the audience. We can't be storytellers without an audience.
And we can't be writers without readers.
I'm amazed at just how closely this meshes with stand-up comedy.
Yes.
It's really incredible.
So. Yes.
You're almost going for the same payoff every time.
Mm-hmm.
Can a good storyteller tell a rotten story?
Well,
yeah.
I mean, it could be poor material. It could be poor material. It could be in bad taste. Or it
An
could be
day.
Not right for the audience that you're sitting in front of, like the dog that talked.
Yeah.
Right.
It's obviously not right, right for the third graders, but it might be right for an older group.
See, to me, that's a joke, though, and not a story. How do you tell the difference? To me, that's a setup that almost told like a joke.
It is, and it does have a punchline, it does have a payoff, but it's a story. It's a funny story. And it came out of people just hanging around talking and polishing and getting better and better as each one told the story.
I think jokes are mostly very, very short stories.
Yeah. You know? I can't tell a story to save my hide.
Really?
Really.
But you write songs.
I write music.
You write music?
Yeah.
Do you write lyrics?
No.
Oh, okay.
No,
sorry,
no.
Sorry.
No, it's
I
just...
I think I frightened him.
No, you didn't frighten me.
But you must go home and tell someone
I try to
there.
Tell stories to the children when they were younger.
You were
I
just telling
yeah.
me about right. the stories you tell to your children.
But they're children, right? It's an easy audience.
No.
No? Am I wrong?
Oh,
have
my
I
God.
Been good all this
are
time?
They
wait a minute.
Audience or what, Mary?
Oh, yeah, they are tough. And
really?
They're noisy, and you have to get them, and you have to hold them by yep. everything in your pack.
Well, you can threaten
tricks.
To ground them. I mean, that usually works.
You know, the best audience I ever had, well, the Snickering Witches did storytelling in a maximum security men's prison.
Mm.
Very attentive.
Captive audience.
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Nancy in Amsterdam. You're on, Nancy.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I have a question about, the stories I've told they're usually true stories. They're just weird things that happen, and I can really be very almost like performance, you know, like a performance. I get animated and I feel good cut, and I engage my audience and they laugh. But I don't know how to make up a fictional story, and I wish I did. I have a little bit of performing the community theater and I'd like to do something that we would do in the theater, but I don't know how to get started, and I don't know how to make the transition from reality to fiction.
That's a tough transition.
Are you talking about wanting to tell fictional stories or wanting to write them?
I'd like to write something that maybe you could perform at the theater, at the community theater.
Mm-hmm. Well, using your life as a means to get your story out there, I think that's great. And if you ever heard Spalding Gray or mm-hmm. any one of the moth storytellers, for example, using their own lives to tell their stories and making them compelling in front of an audience, I think there's a lot of raw material right there in what you already have.
What you need is an imaginary friend. Okay, I have a bunch. Most of my friends are imaginary. My family has forgiven me for it. I often use stories from real events in my life in my novels. But what I have that you don't have, kind of like the Cowardly Lion thing, is I have imaginary friends that take part in that story and who can take it in a direction that I would not necessarily take it, or who can react to it in a different way than I would. Do you see what I mean?
Does that mean that you're changing some of the details, you know, embellishing or...
Yeah, uh-huh.
Which
I am.
Nothing wrong with that, yes.
No, that's why it's fiction.
It's my middle name, really.
Mary Embellishment Murphy, I'll be darned.
Made mention of following, I don't know if you would refer to it as an outline or a paradigm, or a...
pattern, yeah.
Yeah, what is that? Can you thumbnail sketch that for me, what that is?
Well, for instance, the love story, right? The love story, boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl back. That's from folktales. Or, you know, girl finds boy, girl loses her shoe,
yeah,
and so on and so
Eats
forth.
Eats an apple, falls asleep, that kind of thing.
That kind of thing. And yeah. And the journey story has a specific pattern to it. You start in your normal world, you have to leave it, and you have to grow as a result of facing obstacles and overcoming them. You get helpers and magic objects along the way. Think Lord of the Rings. That's taken, you might as well take it from the major arcana of the tarot deck. It's so archetypal.
Nancy, thank you for the call. We appreciate it very much. Barbara Chapitis is here, and Mary Murphy. You've written nonfiction and fiction.
Yeah. I am transgenre.
Isn't that interesting? I mean, not everybody can do that. Now, Nancy, our last caller, said she tells true stories and she wants to make up stories. And right. I think that's a just saying you want to do it isn't enough.
No, it's not. And you do need to know what you have to throw into the mix. For instance, creating fiction does require some imaginary friends and embellishing on the situation. Writing nonfiction, I think that storytelling really helped me with that. Because in nonfiction, you can't rely on the character's voice or the kind of tone and cadence of the world. You're telling something that happened.
Right.
So it's you and your naked voice. Yeah. And you have to trust it and develop it in much the same way that you do when you're telling stories.
Now, I have a question for Barbara, and that is when you're coming up with a fiction idea, does it come from real life originally, or does it come from an imagination or a dream?
Any of the above? Yeah, I keep thinking of my novel, These Dreams, which started with this really bizarre incident.
Oh, yeah, you told me about
that. Yeah, in a grocery store. And I pretty much wrote it down verbatim. But then what grew out of that incident was this question of, how do we know the difference between illusion and true dreams? And, yeah. and that became the basis of the book.
Mm.
And what when those dreams become nightmares?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
I like it. Deep stuff. 800-348-2551. This whole thing is an illusion, actually.
Yes.
And we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Amherst Copy and Design Works, offering printing and copying, sign making and design services, from booklets to stationery and labels to lawn signs in downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, amherstcopy.com. Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and garden equipment, parts and service to customers throughout western Massachusetts, a family-owned business for over 50 years, boydenandperrin.com. Grapes & Grains Wine & Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, offering wine and craft spirits from around the globe and from local artisans, hand-picked selections of wines, single malts, and small-batch bourbons, grapesandgrainswine.com. Schenectady County Historical Society in Schenectady's Historic Stockade District, featuring exhibits, walking tours, research library, and more, now presenting Secret Stockade Walking Tours with Lunch, schenectadyhistorical.org. And Northeast Solar in Hatfield, Massachusetts, helping Pioneer Valley residents live more sustainably with solar power for home, business, or farm. Keep solar local. Northeast-solar.com.
Still no sign of the talking points, but you know, with Barbara and Mary here, we really don't need talking points. Note to self, forget the talking points. This is coming in from email, and Mark asks, how does an ordinary person in the neighborhood go from writing a story in a scrapbook to actually getting their story to real-life publishers, and how does one avoid the fake predatory publishers? Well, that's a whole show in itself, right. Mark. Let's keep it to 20 seconds.
The long and winding road. I'll start with the last question first. There is a site called Predators and Editors, which lists all the scam agents and publishers.
Interesting.
Yes, and I think it's preded.com or something like that. So you can just look them up and find out if you're dealing with a publisher. If they're
there are vanity presses, and they're not necessarily predatory. If you are vain enough to say, I want my book and nobody else wants it, but I want to publish it, then that person theoretically is performing a service, right?
Absolutely. And these days you don't need to do that. You can just self-publish.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's not a problem. As in terms of turning it into... taking your scrapbook stories and turning them into book-length work.
Yeah. Go short story. Go Raymond Carver on this.
You know what? Just sit down and start writing. And take some classes. Get involved in some writing workshops. Bounce your ideas off other writers. Talk to other people. We don't actually do this stuff alone.
Before we get back to the phone calls, let me ask you a question. What do you expect of your audience when you tell a story?
I expect their attention, and if I have their attention and their willingness to listen, the sky is the limit. You can really do almost anything for them. And you know, as we talked about with the third grade, as opposed to an adult audience, you have to choose the right story, the appropriate story for your audience. But once you do, you almost play them like you were a symphony orchestra conductor.
You're so cynical.
Yeah. Yes, we storytellers are.
Oh, we're very manipulative people.
Yes,
that's
yes.
our job.
Typical
is,
artists.
Yeah, yes.
Our number to call here is 800-348-2551. We'll go to Joe in Scotia. Joe, you're on.
Hey, top of the day. And I have to say that I just think that Barbara and Mary are great.
Agreed.
And I'm calling as a fellow storyteller to encourage them. And I'm wondering, Mary, if you could just give a little overview to the Interfaith Story Circle and Children at the Well, because one of the things that you and Barbara have both talked about is storytelling, building community, and even in writing that it's done as community rather than as a solo act. And I think that Interfaith Story Circle is just one of the blessings of the region.
Yes.
Well, I just wanted to wish you guys well and hope to see you around, and thanks for being on this show.
Well,
hey,
thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you.
All right, well, tell us about it.
Well, there's the Interfaith Story Circle of the Tri-City area, and that's a group of adults that get together once a month, and they tell stories and they listen to stories, mainly faith-based from various different faiths. And at one point, it was decided that there wasn't any way to reach children or the youth of the communities in which we're talking about. And one thing led to another, and we began Children at the Well within the Interfaith Story Circle. And that's a group that comes together. There's different faiths, and the students range from, say, 6th grade through 12th grade. And they learn the art of storytelling, but then what we learn from them is about their faith and their faith tradition and the culture of the stories that they tell. Hmm. And so they bring their stories, their folk tales, or maybe their personal essays as well, to the group, and we all learn, and we all know something more about the faith tradition. We all know something more about being with each other and learning from each other. And I've learned such fascinating things from Hindus, Muslims, Jewish, Christian students. And then having them use their talents and all the tools of the storytellers to go out and wow an audience. And they've been doing it for many, many years now. I think they're in their 11th year this year. And I did work as a coach for a while, and now I just enjoy listening
to
them.
Well, good for you. The number to call is 800-348-2551. Sharon in Kinderhook, you're on. Is it not Sharon?
No, it's Sean.
We'll just call you Sharon.
He was so close.
I'm sorry. There's no R on the board, but whatever you want to be called, you're on.
Okay, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. I want to write a book that's fiction, but I want to have a character in there that, you know, tells nonfiction stories. He was like an uncle to me, and his stories I never forgot, and they're incredible. He's a gentleman from Brooklyn, and he talks with that real heavy Brooklyn accent.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the stories, I mean, the tractor trailer that they picked up, it had all left shoes in it, so it was a waste, you know? Yeah. I mean, ridiculous. And then they got a armored car, and they locked the guy inside the armored car with the keys, you know? I mean, these stories I never forgot, and just, you know, when he breaks into these stories, it's incredible. And like, I mean, people really need to hear these stories, and there's no rules, right?
Oh, there are plenty of rules. Once you know them, you can go about breaking all of them.
Oh,
no.
I like it.
But it is kind of important to know them, because then you know what you're breaking. I think the primary rule in something like this is to create your sort of overarching narrative arc. You want to take one of your characters from one emotional stance to a different one. And that's pretty much it. That's the journey, right? So it could be the listener to this uncle, someone who's listening, a kid who's listening to this uncle's stories. Could be the uncle himself, could be both. And
right.
Once you've decided that, then you can just go along and let the stories carry it forward. Oh, what is the name of that movie?
Oh, I understand.
You see what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Or there's the grandfather tales, but Richard Chase, and in that they're they have connective tissue between these stories of families and in the mountains, and they're funny and they're serious and they're supposedly told by different family members that come into the picture.
So they're connected. So that means is there a conflict and resolution in this, in the overarching story?
There's a change. You know, that can be conflict resolution. It can be sort of a, I was this kind of an idiot, now I'm that kind of an idiot.
Yeah. That's my story, actually.
Change in idiocy.
I knew that one.
But you want to carry your readers or listeners on a sort of a learning journey, you know?
Hey, Sean or Sharon, thank you for the call.
Thank you. Bye.
Have a good one. Let's go.
I just want to say I really admire that. I think it's so important for us to tell our family stories and to pass them.
And I didn't ask Sean whether, in fact, his relative is still alive.
Right.
But I would get the tape recorder out
and
get these stories on tape.
You know, and he says incredible stories, and certainly they're great. But there are so many. Everyone has these stories in their family. And when I go to hear a person tell their stories, I did a memoir project. They start out by saying, oh, we don't have any stories. I'm just a typical ordinary person.
Yeah.
But as they talk, the family comes out, the culture comes out, and the crazy things that happen with their children come out, and it's wonderful.
We all have stories. We're made of stories.
Yes.
Number to call here is 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. It is Writers Forum. Barbara Chepitis is here, and Mary Murphy. Mary, what are you working on now?
Well, what I'm working on now is that I'm about to tell stories for the school at the Northeast in Schenectady, a school for troubled youth. And I go in there and I do the entire day, and I have my ups and downs, and tell it's an international day, so I'll tell folk tales from all around the world. And it's an audience that's like none other. They are so tense and uptight and not wanting to listen or pretending not to listen. But they love stories, and you just know it. It's not necessarily that they love the storytelling, but they love the stories. And a lot of times, kids have never been told stories. They've never been told folk tales. They've never sat down and looked at a picture book. And so what you're doing is opening a whole new world to them.
So the outward hostility, though, that must be a tough thing as a storyteller. You've got to really rely on your experience and discipline to break that ice, right?
Right. And break the ice. That's exactly what it is. You've really got to keep going and keep painting those pictures, and eventually they'll look at them.
Yeah. All right. Now, Chepitis, what are you working on that you can talk about?
I'm working on two nonfiction books at once because I couldn't decide which one I wanted to write first. And one is all my animal stories, because I have a zillion of them.
I don't own
a zillion animals. It just feels that way. Two dogs, two cats, eight chickens, you know.
Yeah. But that's a good number.
Yeah. I'm surrounded by wild animals, so we've had a lot of adventures.
Cool.
And I really want to work with that. And I'm also working on a other memoir called Honey from the Bones, which is about ghosts. Yes.
that's a nonfiction?
That's nonfiction.
About ghosts.
I've done some paranormal investigation for research.
And what have you found?
I'm going to tell the story with Jessica's thing.
Really?
Spoil here, but I had
the
a
podcast.
Wild, I had things thrown at me.
By spirits?
Yeah, didn't expect it. I was out ghost hunting with a guy named, believe it or not, Johnny Graves.
Johnny Graves.
You bet.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah. We'll be looking forward to that, and we'll be looking forward to the podcast. And glad you're two-timing me, Barbara. That's terrific. Let's go back to the phones. And Tanya in Amenia. Tanya, you're on.
Oh, it's actually Tonya.
All right. Well, Tonya. Can we call you Sharon to keep it clear? No, Tonya, you're on.
Bologna or Begonia. Okay.
All right, you're on.
So this is an absolutely fascinating broadcast. I'm so glad you're doing this. And you guys have inspired me. I am a journalist. I write stories for a newspaper, several other every week. So I interview people all the time about their stories. But I have a story, and I have kind of an unbelievable archive that's landed at my feet of my great uncle and my grandmother, both of whom were famous artists. And my brother, who's also a more famous writer than I am, has written a book and has had it serialized in The New Yorker. But you guys have given me the idea that what I could write about that would not be his, and I want to get your feedback on this, is the stories to tell our grandchildren and our children that my grandmother, my great aunt, and all of those in our forebears told us that he did not include in his book.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of that?
Yes, absolutely.
Because I'm a little daunted because, you know, these are, it's a huge archive. You know, they were famous people. I now have to sift through all this stuff, and I don't want to be bogged down by it. And yet, it's fascinating. Just to give you a sense of it, my great uncle traveled to Tibet in 1908 and met the king of Ladakh, who was not able to look at anyone. He was cross-eyed because he was considered so holy you could not look into his eyes.
Wow.
Oh, my.
That's great.
Yes, wow. And my grandfather stayed in a place in Ukraine, and he had a dream that all these cats were climbing all over him, only to have found that that was a cat mitten factory where they killed cats. And later, it turned out to be the place where Chernobyl happened.
Oh, my gosh. Barbara just did a spit take. It was like Danny Thomas. It was pretty impressive.
I just took a sip of water.
Yeah.
That was bad
so
timing.
That's kind of a ghost story that was in the family. Right. But I'm just that's one of many, many, many.
What you're going to need to do is find the way to tie them together.
That's what I want to know, because I'm used to telling stories that are 800 words long. How do I tie them all together?
Well, I'm just interested to know, do you remember these people telling you the stories, or do you have in front of you a tape recorder that has a tape of them, or any of them still alive?
Unfortunately, they are all gone. These people are all gone, but I do have some tapes of them, and I have other members of the family older than I who can remember the stories very well.
Would you like to make it a book of essays? What do you think, Barb?
There are so many options. One is to ask yourself how. I like to do this a lot because I think that the past always influences the present. Think about how what they did has created your life or your outlook.
Oh, now that is great. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that a lot because it has. It's been very formative. And in fact, I just read a book called The Last Storyteller by Frank Delaney, who's a storyteller, that is made me quit my job, one of my jobs. I'm still writing for the newspaper, and say, I've got to tell this story.
Yeah. Yes. So you can approach it from your current time and then refer back to the different ways in which this fed you.
Okay.
Tonya, thanks a lot.
I am so inspired. Thank you so much, both
Something
of you.
Something I like to read myself.
Yeah.
I think anything that inspires you to quit your job is quality art.
It's
you
a
know?
Good thing.
It's good work. Let's go to Glenn in Hudson. Glenn, very quickly.
Yes, hi. I'm curious about transitioning like a quick-wit humor into a story or into a comedy routine or that kind of thing.
Does it come from your life?
Yes, that's the thing. It's, you know, I can make people laugh hysterically, you know, person to person, and then, you know, it's
gone. With the story, you just keep telling it and telling it, but it should have a beginning, middle, and end. It should start someplace and get to maybe a punchline if it's to be a comic story. But you could go to the story circle of the Capital District and try out stories anytime you wanted to, and see if you could shape one.
Yeah. And it's tough to write comedy, don't you think? And put it on the printed word.
I think so.
Inflection is tough to get.
It is, but if you can hear it in your head, like I've written some things that wind up being funny when I tell them, and it's because I can hear the way they should go.
Yeah.
The timing is different when you're writing it.
Yeah.
You know, and how you make it sound funny in writing is different, but it is the same concept. It's timing, it's pacing, it's cadence, it's sound, you know.
Can you write comedy, Barbara?
I can write stuff that makes people laugh.
Yes?
Yeah.
Do you ever find that something is hilarious to you on the written page and then somebody reads it and says, well, what's that?
No, definitely. Never.
Really? You're a genius.
Would I admit
I'm so
it?
Glad that you're here.
I did. People even love, like, the songs I write for my dogs, okay?
So.
And I once wrote a story that is funny when I tell it, and somebody else told it, and it just died on the vine.
Yeah, well,
it was
we've all been there. So many people have stolen my one-liners and wrote them.
Yeah.
You know how hilarious I am. Hey! Okay, we're done. Hey, Barbara Chepitis, thanks for being here.
Oh.
Thank you for
having
me.
Well, off you go. Go to the podcast or whatever else you have to do now.
I'll come back to you, Ray. You know I always do.
I hope you come back. Mary Murphy, thanks for coming, and I hope you come back as well.
I would love to. Thank you.
Thanks to all of our listeners. Thanks to everybody who called in and wrote in today. Support comes from the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, announcing their updated website with more information about membership, grants, and loans so our past has a future. PreserveNYS.org. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings, henyonbakery.com. At Pine Cobble School, Williamstown, Massachusetts, with a 20-acre campus, becomes a living laboratory for learning in all grades, pre-K through ninth grade. A good beginning never ends. PineCobble.org. Thanks again to Barbara and Mary for being here. Thanks to you for listening and for calling. Thanks to Zachary T. Malloy, our engineer. Your phones were answered by Bruce Herbach, our producer, who didn't give me the talking points. Jessica Blaustein-Marshall, I'm Ray Graff. Stay tuned now for news.